Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. Here we are at the end of May 2013. Summer has erupted in New York. The temperature was around 90 today. I hope wherever you are that the weather is doing okay. I know my friends out in California are going through literally hell with all the fires. So wherever you are and the tornadoes in Kansas, I hope you're safe and that things are going well for you and your families and those close to you. As I started out saying, my name is Mike Cutler. I'm a retired senior special agent with the former Immigration and Naturalization Service. And it is my delight to join you at the end of the week to play that game of catch-up, to catch up on all the crazy news that, quite frankly, the major news media will not discuss for whatever reasons. But we don't have any such agenda here. This is about celebrating the First Amendment. Not only is this about freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of religion, but about the right for peaceable assemblage so we can have those discussions, and the right to seek redress of grievances. And boy, oh boy, if you don't have grievances, you better check for a straight line EEG, because boy, oh boy, there's no shortage of grievances. Let me give you three websites, and I see we have callers. And by the way, Lauren Martell, a good friend and an attorney and an immigration and political activist in general down in South Carolina, will be joining me. The three websites I would love for all of you to check out. First of all, michaelcutler.net, one word. My last name is C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. The other website, talkborder.com, where I have videos posted of interviews that I've done. And finally, I'm a fellow with an organization in California known as Californians for Population Stabilization, and their excellent website is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. I write frequently for them. In fact, I believe one of my articles, pardon me, is now posted on their website. So to all my friends in California, again, I hope you're all safe out there in Santa Barbara, but please visit capsweb.org. And let's get to the phones. My goodness, we have all kinds of calls hanging there. Here we go. Hi, this is Mike Cutler.
Hey.
Lauren, that you?
Hey, Michael, it's Lauren. Yeah, Lauren, I'm here. How are you doing tonight?
I'm okay. We've got a couple of other calls. Let me just see who's on the line. The thing
that's
is lighting
exciting.
Up
I told a lot of people about this, so
well,
maybe there are some people that I passed on. All right, take a call.
Let's see who we've got. You're speaking with Mike Cutler. Who's
me?
This? Who's
is
this?
That me?
I got you.
My name
is Jim. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm a friend of Lauren's. I'm one of the Marines who was off Iran at the time of the hostage rescue attempt, and she mentioned that you're going to be speaking about that Hezbollah operative who's recently been apprehended.
Yes,
and I absolutely
correct,
want to
yeah.
listen in. And
by the way, let me start out. I hate to cut you off, but let me start out by thanking you for our service to this country.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's greatly appreciated. I just want you to know that. And we will be getting to that story. It's it gets crazier by the moment, don't you think?
I think this is it's obviously a planned thing. If you've read the paperwork on the Muslim Brotherhood and the exposés that have been done by people like John Guandolo and others, this has been an absolute subversion of the United States government, and it is quite possible that we have a member of the Muslim Brotherhood in the White House right now, and that's beyond conspiracy theory serious. This guy is doing nothing but endorsing Al-Qaeda front groups in Libya, Al-Qaeda front groups in Egypt, and now they're openly talking about funding Al-Qaeda rebels in order to overthrow the Syrian dictator Assad. And I just find it unimaginable that 11 years after 9/11, we are no longer fighting Al-Qaeda, we are funding Al-Qaeda.
Well, if what you're saying is accurate, that's the stuff of nightmares.
It's definitely a nightmare. I mean, we have a man who has a Muslim background, a Muslim upbringing in Indonesia, a Muslim stepfather, Muslim influences his whole maturing life when he was a small child, and then knowing that he's hanging out with a guy going to Pakistan who's a Muslim, knowing that the person who got him involved with, if I remember right, his money that was paid for to go to Columbia University was a Muslim operative. I can't remember the gentleman's name right now. We know that he was involved with many groups in Chicago that were all over the board politically on the left side, none on the right. So I see an interesting connection between these guys. You have the communist idea of how to run finances and the ideas of freedom economically. They align very well with those of Islam in that there is to be no major group of persons or people that are superior to others economically. And that's going along with the idea of communism, that there's
Let me just make a point. Hang on one second, Jim. I just want to make one point, and then we're going to move on. And I'll be honest, I can't verify what you're telling me. I find it interesting and certainly worth checking out. And this is about the free exchange of ideas. But I don't want this to be a program about Obama this evening. I want to get to this issue about the immigration story on this guy that wound up getting United States citizenship, even though, according to the FBI, he was a commander in the Hezbollah. And he's one of a number of people who have easily been able to game the immigration system. And this goes back to the 93 terror attacks also. And that's really where I want to keep the conversation, because to be honest with you, I don't know that I can verify what you're saying, and I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just talking about verifying. And I want to be focused on what we can verify this evening. Fair enough?
Well, I understand that. Sure, I understand that. And I'd have to dig it up off my computer, the files of the guys' names. But it is true. I mean, during the 1990s, Bill Clinton directed the CIA to no longer search for Islamic terror suspects after the 93 bombing, and he had them go after right-wing terrorists, and he also had them go after pirated videos. And if you do a search for that, this is what they did, beginning with the stonewalling that happened between the CIA and the FBI and their failure to exchange information.
Well, it gets even worse than that. You know, I was an immigration agent for 30 years, and I will tell you that what we are doing with immigration is doing absolutely nothing to protect America or Americans, whether it's from international terrorist organizations or transnational criminal groups. It makes absolutely no sense. And, you know, I will tell you this, Jim, and we've got another call waiting, and I want to find out who else is on the line. But let me tell you something. In New York, there was a problem with people driving drunk. Well, what they did was to lower the permissible drug blood alcohol level to 0.08. They're talking about dropping it yet again. They impose stringent penalties. Get caught driving drunk, they will take your car, they will put you in jail, they will hammer you with fines, they will go after you like there's no tomorrow. And I agree with it, by the way, but it's effective. Now there's a problem with people texting and crashing. Well, starting tomorrow, you get caught texting while you're driving, you will get hit with 5 points on your license. I don't know of any other charge that gets you 5 points, unless maybe you're going 100 miles an hour through a school zone. So they're saying, okay, if there's behavior that we want to stop, we hammer people and we deter it that way. If supposedly we want to look at why the Immigration Reform Act of Ronald Reagan, which was another travesty, by the way, it's both sides of the aisle, why that was a failure, it was about enforcement and not going after the fraud. They never enforced the law. So rather than say, look, if you want to secure the borders, there has to be consequences for committing identity theft. There has to be consequences for evading the inspections process that's supposed to keep out criminals, terrorists, and people who compete unfairly with Americans for jobs. Instead, we're saying, well, if you do those things, we want to provide you with a pathway to citizenship. Can you explain where the deterrence is in that strategy?
There's absolutely none, and this is
exactly
why I'm wondering how much of this is intentional, or if these people are just that dumb.
No, it's not.
It is so intentional.
I'm going to tell you why, Jim, and then I'm going to move on. And forgive me, but please stay with us, and we'll get back to you. Alan Greenspan.
No, thank you. You've given me plenty of time. Thank you.
That's okay. I just want you to know this, and if you shoot me an email, or Lauren can do it for you. Alan Greenspan testified before the Immigration Subcommittee in the Senate, April 30th, 2009. Do you know how he referred to Americans with skills or education? The privileged elite. The privileged elite. And he said that the goal should be to eliminate inequality in wages, or at least greatly reduce them, not based on race, religion, gender, because I would agree with him, but by skill. Well, that to me, and I'm, by the way, a registered lifelong Democrat, that to me is not what this country was built on. That almost sounded like something straight out of the Communist Manifesto, this idea that no matter how educated, how well-trained, how skilled you are, your salary should not reflect your level of expertise, skill, education, or whatever. How insane is that?
It's nuts. It's like you said, from each according to their needs, from each according to their abilities.
Right.
This
remarkable.
Anyway,
and he said that the goal should be to get foreign families to move into what he referred to as the vacated housing units, people's homes. Who vacated them? American families who lost their homes to foreclosure because they lost their livelihoods.
I don't want to stereotype people when I say this, but so many of the jobs that are being taken by illegal immigrants, they are starter jobs. And if you want to eliminate unemployment in the inner city or in the uneducated white youth area, well, you know, doing landscaping and building houses and framing and roofing, those are perfect jobs for people to learn skills at. And yet they're hiring illegal aliens to do this.
I agree, but it's also with the way that they're doing H-1B visas. They want to more than double those also, and that was what he advocated for. Those are the high-end jobs. And by the way, my dad was a construction worker. He was a plumber, as he always liked to proudly say, and rightfully so, by trade. And to me, a tradesman is no less valuable than a guy with a profession. I mean, look, is a skilled carpenter, electrician, or plumber less valuable than an accountant? Think about it.
Well, when your sink stops up, you don't break out the calculator.
No, and you know, or when you're building that hospital, where would surgeons practice medicine if you didn't have construction workers building the hospitals, or the engineers designing the equipment, or the technicians maintaining them? This is a big orchestra.
Exactly.
We all have an instrument to play, and the elitist mentality that if you don't have a 4-year degree or more, then you're worthless is nonsense. You know, unfortunately, and I have a college education. My mother came here ahead of the Holocaust. I'm Jewish. But she hammered into my head I was going to college. So I'm a big fan of education. But today, universities have become nothing more than indoctrination centers in all too many instances. And I've come to think of college campuses as the parade grounds on a military base where everyone learns to march in lockstep or else. Am I getting that wrong?
Well, no, and you know, this is a good segue.
Go ahead, Lauren.
This is actually a good segue into something that, you know, I always thought the word saw was like the past tense of see, or, you know, something that you use to cut something. But now that I'm starting to look at what these seasonal agricultural workers are, the saw visa. Yeah, and I thought that might be a good segue into what we were talking about how immigration fraud is such a national security, and get back onto Wasim.
Absolutely.
And how
I
he
to
even
got
in
more,
here.
I got one more call, Lauren. Hang on 1 second. I'm going to ask you to stand by, and I'm going to move on to my next caller. But thank you so much for the call, and thank you for your service, and I hope you'll stay with us for the rest of the program.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. This is Mike Cutler. Who am I speaking to? Hello.
You may still have me.
Oh, it's still you. Well, I guess I've got you on two different numbers, so there. Maybe not. I have no idea. Okay. All right. Well, anyway, thank you for the call, Jim. Lauren, I'm going to cut you loose, but like I say, I hope you'll be listening.
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Let me try this one more time. Hello? Hello. Okay, I guess not. All right, Lauren, you know, it's an amazing story. This guy, Wasim Alush. And for those of you who aren't familiar with this guy, the story was sent to me, and it's really funny. As I mentioned at the top of the hour, I do commentaries for an organization known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization, and I'm always trying to find new ways to make the point so people get it, because sometimes people can just be so dense about immigration because they've been drinking the Kool-Aid, unfortunately, sometimes with not one but two straws. And I said, you know, if this was a military situation, and I really see what immigration does as being an adjunct to the military. The military's job is to secure our borders externally, to keep our enemy as far from our shores as possible. Immigration's responsibility is to secure the border up close and in person and make sure that no one gets past the border. That's the Border Patrol's job. But if someone does manage to do so, because again, it's not just the Mexican border, folks. This nonsense about the Mexican border. We're fixated on one hole with a boat that has a bunch of holes in the bottom of it. We all know it only takes one hole in the bottom of your boat for it to wind up at the bottom of the lake. But the idea is that if someone does manage to violate those immigration laws that, as I pointed out a couple of minutes ago, were designed to protect our lives and jobs, then you need agents who can backstop the Border Patrol and the inspectors at ports of entry and arrest these folks and make certain that we enforce the law to deter future law violators. That's part of why we arrest people. It's not just to punish people to break the law, but to discourage others so that they look at the situation and say, nope, I'm not going to do that. That's why the Internal Revenue Service, and they are deservedly coming under extreme fire right now, but one of the tactics they always like to do is as April 15th gets close, they'll round up a bunch of people for tax evasion or tax fraud, and they'll try to make it the pillars of the community, some pediatrician and a school teacher, maybe a clergyman, and they make them do the perp walk, and they do it so that you're watching the news and you go, oh, my God, look what they're doing to those poor people. I better not mess with the IRS because they'll come and get me. And so that is how you deter people from doing things that are wrong. That's why they do the commercials about seatbelts, you know, click it or ticket. Convince people that if you violate the law, there's a good chance your violation will be discovered, and we have the resources and the political will to make those arrests and make you pay for violating laws that we think are important. So here what we're doing flies in the exact face of all that by giving people opportunities to become citizens when they run the border. And Schumer says, well, once we secure the border, and they ignore everything else. Well, this guy, Wasim Alush, incredibly, is a United States citizen, and he came to the attention of the FBI because he filed for a security clearance so he could work for the Department of Defense. And I did a little bit of digging on the Internet, and it was interesting because when I wrote for CAPS, I used the word infiltrator to describe aliens who come here for nefarious purposes. I'm not talking about the guy that wants to mow lawns and he's desperate, and there's no reason for these folks to be here. But I will tell you also that when I was an immigration agent, I didn't look at the guy that was working in the sweatshop as my enemy. He was the guy that needed to be arrested, but nobody did a victory dance because you arrested some woman working in a sweatshop, which, by the way, we've now moved overseas. The companies have moved overseas, so they don't have to bother with pesky labor laws or environmental laws. They can use children when you move things over into Asia. Crazy stuff people do to make a dollar, and there's a place in hell for some of these people. But the idea, though, was that if you come here because you're a criminal or a terrorist or a spy or a war criminal, you are an infiltrator. And then I get this article from a former colleague not 30 minutes after I finished writing my article for CAPS, and the headline of the article was about infiltrators, and it was about this guy, Wasim Alush. And Wasim Alush truly appears to be, I'm not making an accusation, the FBI is doing a good enough job, but they are alleging that this piece of work, if it's accurate, and I have no reason to doubt it, was a commander in the Hezbollah. Reportedly, back in the 80s, he killed an Israeli soldier after he sodomized him or her. They didn't say what the gender was. And so the Israelis got a hold of him. And then somehow he makes his way to the United States, attends a university in the United States, gets a green card by being married to an American citizen who, according to newspaper reports, is herself a lieutenant colonel in the Army. And then he gets divorced. But when he filed for citizenship, never mentioned the divorce, never mentioned his background as a commander in the Hezbollah, which is a felony. It's immigration fraud. And this isn't anything new. If you go back to 1993, you could talk about a guy by the name of Amil Amirkansi, Pakistani national, who applied for political asylum, just like the Tsarnaev brothers, by the way, and their parents. And I'm a big fan of political asylum when it's truly to help people who are in trouble. My background is a Jew. You know, I was a B'nai B'rith president back in college. I went to outside the White House with thousands of other people, including Dr. Martin Luther King sent over one of his folks to read his telegram in support of what we were doing, asking that President Johnson convinced the Russians to let people go who wanted to come to America and elsewhere and get political asylum if they were members of minority groups, whether it was the religious minority or others, so that they wouldn't suffer persecution in Russia. So I think that we are at our best when we are being hospitable, compassionate, and charitable. But we are stupid when we allow the bad guys to see in our compassion weakness. And that's what we've done. So this guy, Kansi, gets political asylum by lying, or he was in the middle of getting it. It's a little bit unclear. They've kind of clamped down on his immigration records for obvious reasons. And he repays America's generosity in January of 93 by standing outside the CIA with an AK-47 and opened fire on the vehicles being driven into the compound by CIA employees reporting for duty. He killed two CIA officers and wounded three others. And then he did what international terrorists and transnational criminals are able to do. He fled the United States. But in his case, given the nature of the crime, our guys tracked him down like the dog that he was, dragged him back here kicking and screaming, put him on trial, found him guilty, and executed him. But the people that he killed remained dead. The people he injured remained injured. And just 1 month later, we had the first attack at the World Trade Center, February, I believe it was 26, 1993. And in that case, you had other people who committed immigration fraud. You were talking about the SOAR program that Chuck Schumer, by the way, was the architect of, and he's at it again with the new amnesty program. And there was a guy by the name of Mahmoud Abu-Lima who claimed to have been planting beans in a farm in Florida when in reality he was driving a taxi cab in New York. The closest he came
right.
to a farm was when he drove by Central Park.
Isn't that crazy?
And you know what?
Truly remarkable.
He did plant something. He planted a bomb in the garage of the World Trade Center that killed six people, injured over 1,000, and almost brought the towers down. And another guy who worked with him also claimed political asylum. So
lost in translation there, do you think, Mike?
I'm sorry?
Do you think something got lost in translation as far as what they were supposed to be planting?
Yeah, right.
I'm just trying to make a joke with you here.
I know, I realize
you are. Yeah, it's a serious issue. I'll tell you what.
It's just so twisted. But here's my question. Here's my question that I have to ask you, Lauren, and I have to ask everybody who's out there listening, and I'm glad you're with me today, folks. We learn sometimes by what goes wrong. We figured it out. Our government said, wow, if you get on an airplane with a box cutter, you might hijack the airplane. So although I don't know why DHS, the agency I've come to call the Department of Homeland Surrender, if you remember, now they suspended the change, wanted to allow people to bring clubs and small knives on board airplanes. I mean, you look at these decisions they're making, and they're absolutely off the chart. But, you know,
it's illogical.
No, it is. Well, you know, and when we saw this thing with Amub Talib, the what I call Captain Underpants, the guy that wanted to blow up an airplane by hiding explosives in his drawers, I was half joking, telling people that we better be careful that we don't get the TSA wedgie pretty soon.
Right.
But
can I ask you, has it been like even decades where, you know, we do have enemies, and do you think that that's one of the things that they think about is, you know, how can they, I guess, embed themselves into a culture? And so if we kind of know and understand how that embedding occurs, you know, why is the mainstream media talking about all this stuff? If we can figure it out, I mean, if I can figure it out, why isn't this a standard topic and just something that everybody's trying to make happen for
the
safety of America?
That is such a wonderful question, because why isn't the media talking about WeSum? By the way, I spoke to producers at the major networks. You know, I've done hundreds of TV appearances. Don't ask me why, but no one wants to talk about this case. And you talk about the embedding tactic. Let me read something to you. You just happened to hit on something. These two paragraphs I'm about to read to you, folks, appear in a book, and you can get it online. It's the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. It's free online, so you don't even have to buy it. You can just go right online and punch it in, and it's the monograph, the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. Page 98 has the following sentence. You're going to love this. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11 hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, or applying for asylum after entering. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. Page 47 in that same report has this statement. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Mahmoud Abu Alima, involved in both the World Trade Center and Landmarks plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agricultural Worker Program after falsely claiming that he had picked beans in Florida. Mahmoud Salameh, who rented the truck used in the bombing, overstayed his tourist visa. He then applied for permanent residency under the Agriculture Worker Program, but was rejected. Iyad Mahmoud Ismail, who drove the van containing the bomb, took English language classes at Wichita State University in Kansas on a student visa, and after he dropped out, he remained in the United States out of status. Now, this is exactly what you're asking me. Now, what you folks out there may not realize, because when we hear about foreign students, there's a few things to think about. Number one, not every foreign student is going to Yale, Princeton, or Harvard. Right now, there are over, I kid you not, this is the GAO statement, not my statement, I'll take their word for it, the General Accountability Office in a recent report said that there were more than 10,000 schools authorized to petition the government for foreign students to get visas to come here. The so-called I-20 is the form that the student gets. There are over 850,000 foreign students in the United States right now. Every year, we admit more than 450,000 foreign students. Now, let me tell you what, folks. You look at those numbers. There is no integrity to the process. The foreign student advisor at the university is the one charged with keeping tabs on these folks. And even if they report that a foreign student is no longer in attendance, almost nobody will go out to look for these folks. As I said when I was on Fox News with Megyn Kelly back on May 2nd, these folks are playing a game of hide and seek. The only problem is they hide, nobody is seeking. There's only about 7,000 ICE agents for the whole country, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. More than half of them are doing customs work, which has nothing to do with immigration. So they're more worried about the guy that's making counterfeit Gucci loafers or a counterfeit Rolex watch than the guy that's cranking out counterfeit identity documents, which pose a threat to national security. So you've got about 3,000 immigration agents for the entire United States of America. New York City has more than 35,000 police officers. So when you hear this thing about, oh, my God, Obama's cracking down, baloney. It's a lie. There's no other way of saying it. It's bull. And what they're doing is they're using language. It's all about words. In the old days, a deportation was considered deportation, and if somebody went home voluntarily, that was called voluntary departure. Now they simply use the term removal. So they can say that when they turn someone around at the airport and they say to him, you need to withdraw your application for admission or we're going to put you before a judge, and the guy says, no, I'll just go home, that counts now as a removal. If the guy is a criminal and he's raped 10, 12-year-old girls and did 30 years in jail and he's ordered deported after he does 30 years in jail, he's also counted as a removal. And if some guy is caught out of status as a student, and he says, look, rather than hassle over this, I'll just go home, that's also now a removal. So instead of having distinct categories about people turned around at ports of entry and people who are given voluntary departure versus people who are formally deported, now the administration lumps them all together and just calls them removals. So there's no way of knowing how many people are actually ordered deported from the United States. And that's important, because if you're ordered deported from the United States and you come back, you could be looking at up to 20 years in jail. I actually worked with Senator D'Amato back in the early 80s to make a special crime for criminal aliens who get deported, come back, and make that a 20-year felony rather than the 2-year rap that it used to be. So understand what's happening with the deceptive language, the deceptive numbers. There is no integrity to the system, and you have members of Congress, Schumer, and you got Mr. Rubio down in Florida, and what do they say?
Oh, yeah.
Well, we want to give you citizenship.
Well, let me ask you this question, because there must be some bright, shining bulbs there out of the 3,000 ICE agents, because how is it that they actually caught Mr. Wasim Alush?
They didn't. The FBI did.
Oh, okay. All right. So how did that work?
It may well be that it was immigration and the FBI took credit for it, because they're infamous for that. I mean, look, I had a desk at the FBI, and some of the folks I work with at the Bureau were wonderful. I don't want to, you know, hammer an entire agency. But this is all about taking credits or, you know, whatever. And it was the Joint Terrorism Task Force that made the arrest. JTTF has within it immigration agents. Now, why is that? Because immigration is a critical component of national security. You would never know it to listen to Chuck the Schmuck, my congressman, Chuck Schumer, my senator, rather, actually got in front of the cameras. And by the way, do you know the most dangerous place in Washington, D.C.? Get between Schumer and a TV camera. That's the most dangerous place in Washington. But Chuckles gets in front of the cameras, and what does he say? He says, well, if comprehensive immigration reform had been passed, the Tsarnaev brothers couldn't have carried out the attack because we would have taken them out of the shadows. They weren't in the shadows. Chuck, if you're listening, your nose is growing. You need a nose job. You're a liar. They weren't in the shadows. One guy had a green card. The other guy was a United States citizen. Is that his idea of hiding in the shadows? You know, it's kind of funny. I remember one day we were raiding a place where there were a bunch of illegal aliens who had been smuggled into the United States, and this young kid was hiding in the closet, and he was about 16, 17 years old, and we're trying to grab him by his shoulder to pull him out of the closet, and he was shrugging us off, kind of like, you know, when a kid gets embarrassed, they cover their face. If I can't see you, you can't see me. So he was shrugging us off. I'm hiding. Leave me alone, you know? Well, that's, I guess, Chuck Schumer's version of hiding in the shadows. These guys were very much out there. They were active on college campuses. One guy had citizenship. The other guy was a lawful immigrant. How in the world are these people hiding in the shadows? The rhetoric doesn't even match the truth anymore. It has gotten so blatant, folks, so outrageously out of control, that the people like Chuck Schumer are comfortable lying through their teeth, staring into that camera, and expecting the American people to be stupid enough to fall for the lies. And I'm going to tell you, folks, he's got justification. He has justification. He brought Alan Greenspan, as I mentioned before when Jim called in. Alan Greenspan stood there at a congressional hearing on April the 30th, 2009, and said that we've made a privileged elite out of Americans, and we need to make American workers compete with foreign workers for their jobs so that we could do something about the wage premium they were earning because they were making too much damn money. He actually said that, and the sound was nothing. Nobody went to Washington to complain. Nobody said a word. And what was the message to Greenspan and Schumer? You could do anything you want to the American people. They're not paying attention. They're stupid, and they're lazy. I know my audience isn't like that, but that's why you're listening to me. But please, folks, write letters. Make phone calls. I called up Mr. Rubio's office in Florida. This was amazing. Uh-huh. You can't make this stuff up. Catch this one, Lauren. You're going to love this story. I said, you know, maybe the guy isn't evil. He's just ignorant. So maybe he needs to be educated, and that's why I testify at congressional hearings. And, of course, he's never been to a hearing where I've testified. So let me see if I could reach out to the person on his staff who handles immigration. So I call up Senator Rubio's office at 1:45 in the afternoon. I figured, well, they've been to lunch, they've been fed and watered, they're back at their desks, good time to call. I get an answering machine. I said, wow, I'm not going to bother. I hung up. 2 or 3 days later, I called the same time, I get an answering machine. And this time I said, you know what, I'm going to leave a message. So I listened to the whole recording. And the recording was amazing. It was something
was
like
it
this.
In Spanish?
No, it wasn't in Spanish. No, I think you had to dial 2 for that. But here's the deal. And by the way, I want you to know how much I resent this, folks. And not because I'm anti-Latino. My mother came to America speaking 2 languages. Neither were English. She spoke Yiddish and Polish. She was 14, lived alone in a rooming house, worked in an umbrella factory for $3 a week, but was here legally. Okay? And her first order of business was learn English. My dad's parents came from Russia at the turn of the last century. Job 1 was to learn English. A country does not need to have people of the same race, religion, or ethnicity. I'm a New Yorker. I love diversity. But if you don't speak a common language, we become a Tower of Babel. If you come to America, you should expect that in America, we speak English. If you go to Italy, you should expect they're going to speak Italian. If you go to France, they're going to speak French. This isn't a big deal. This is common sense, except the politicians have so turned common sense on its ear that if you say to somebody, you really need to learn English, this becomes hate speech under the current crop of idiots that call themselves our representative. Well, actually, they're not the idiots. We are. We keep putting these people back in office. But in any event, understand what happens. You call up Rubio and you get a recording. You have reached the offices of Senator Marco Rubio in Florida. Our normal business hours are, I don't know, 8:30 to 5, whatever. If you are getting this message during regular business hours, it means that we are answering somebody else's call. Please, at the tone, leave your name, your phone number, and your Florida zip code and a brief description about the reason you called or words to that effect. And I thought my head was going to explode. In other words, if you don't have a Florida zip code, don't bother. And I thought to myself, what kind of chutzpah is that? What kind of arrogance is that? And I've got another caller that I want to grab, but let me just make the point. The message I left was, my name is Mike Cutler. I'm a retired INS agent. More importantly, I'm an American. And the bill that Senator Rubio is working on would impact every American living in every zip code from coast to coast, border to border. I would appreciate a phone call. This is my phone number. And guess what? Nobody ever called. Hang on 1 second.
I agree with you, Mike. You're on point.
You're on with Mike Cutler. Who do I have the privilege of speaking with this Friday? Hello? Well, I guess they're gone. We'll keep rolling right along here. But doesn't that make sense?
I know a couple of my friends were going to call in, so I don't know if it's just a thing in the queue or whatever, but I know a few people are out there listening for sure. From South Carolina, because we are very interested in what Michael Cutler has to say about these issues.
Well, there's more calls coming, but let me just make a note of this one. I'm a one-man band here, folks, so I don't have an engineer. I just got me, myself, and I. I'm an army of one.
And what
this
an army
Mike
you
Cutler.
Are.
This is Mike Cutler. Who am I speaking with? Okay, well, there we go. And, okay. This is Mike Cutler.
This is Lewis.
Lewis, how are you? Thank you for calling, and thank you for joining us this Friday.
Wow, I just wasn't getting through here.
I'm sorry about that. I hope you've been enjoying the program.
Oh, I have been enjoying the program. And you know, the thing that is bothering me very much is the fact that in this country that we live in, we're allowing Hezbollah to actually set up their own cities in New York, like the 70-acre compound where there's 100 Muslims there, following a leader who is definitely a known terrorist. Why are we allowing this when we know what's been going on?
They've
been there since, since 2001.
How are you familiar with this?
You can look it up. Just look up Islamburg, New York.
Well, you know, the one thing that I do caution people, though, is just because stuff is on the Internet, it isn't necessarily accurate. But, and I've heard stories.
I know that.
Like that.
I know this. But there are about 4 or 5 different articles on the same group of people. I believe it tells you that who the leader is of this group? Trying to remember what this compound's name is. It's under here. He's a known cleric. He's a Pakistani.
And by the way, Michael, Lewis also served our country. He also has served our country in the military.
He's a Vietnam vet.
Well, thank you, Lewis. I certainly appreciate your service to America.
You're welcome.
You know,
oh, yes.
What's astonishing to
me? Mubarak Allah Shah Galani is the name of the guy.
Well, I'll tell you what, Lewis, if you could forward this over to Lauren, or you could send it to my website, michaelcutler.net, I'd love to take a look at that and see what I can find out.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because, you see, I was in Special Forces in the Air Force.
Okay.
And, you know, it's easy to tell what we are doing. A lot of times, it's interesting. After 9/11, how many people were just rounded up all over the United States because the CIA keeps an eye on them. And I'm just wondering, how is it that the CIA is not doing that today?
Well, again, I'm not sure what did or didn't happen. But, you know, I have to tell you, one thing I do want to make a point about, I have received so many emails because, you know, ever since 9/11, ever since I started doing congressional hearings, everyone wants to send me their emails. And, you know, for about 5 years, I kept getting the same email about a piece of legislation that purportedly was going to allow a bunch of terrorists into the United States under the guise of being refugees. Not impossible. Again, we know that one of the ways of embedding is to claim political asylum. But the legislative bill that they provided was an HB bill, not an HR. And HR is the way that a congressional bill goes through the House. HB would be a House bill in a state legislature. Well, for the life of me, no matter how I ran that bill number, it came back to nothing. And, in fact, but I was getting it for at least 4 or 5 years. I must have had 40 different people send me the same exact email over a period of 5 years. It had been like a copy and paste kind of a deal with the exact way. While you slept, this is what the White House has been doing. And then you go to check it out, and then you started to search for the legislation. And I've gotten pretty good looking through the various resources and websites on Capitol Hill. It was a nothing. It was a fabrication that somebody came up with. It sounded like something somebody wanted to put out there. So it became the game of telephone where everybody was putting it out there. And people are calling me up and saying, did you see such and such? And I said, okay, run that bill. Here's the website. Go to Thomas, which is where they post the House bills, see what you come up with. They said, there's nothing there. I said, check out the wording. Put the wording into Google, because that should pop up if the wording is there. Right?
Yeah.
Nothing shows up. He said, well, how is this possible? I said, somebody was trying to get, apparently, an award for creative writing. And so all I'm saying to you, and I'm not blaming you, but there is so much that's on the Internet, and when you start to try to track it down, you find out that you're chasing dust. What you're saying may well be accurate, but everybody, and I mean this sincerely, folks, be careful. Don't start, and, you know, many of my friends, and they've been agents, without thinking, will sometimes forward something to me, and then I'll look at it, and they'll say, no, you're wrong. And they look at it and say, gee whiz, you're right. I guess it was a mistake. Or they'll send me a retraction saying, I sent this out, I didn't fact check it first. It's really important before you pass information along that you take responsibility for anything you forward to anybody for two reasons, or three reasons. Number one, it's a waste of everyone's time and it gives people the wrong ideas. And when people start quoting the articles, if they're someone's fantasy or bad dream, it hurts people's credibility. It also hurts the credibility of those of us who are trying to get a handle on what's going on and making members of Congress and state and city legislatures accountable. What you're giving me may well be accurate. That's why I want to track it down, Lewis.
Sure.
I'm saying, though,
Fox
is be
News.
Careful. I hope I make sense to you.
No, you absolutely make sense to me. And believe me, I'm not the kind of guy who goes around trying to grab
rumors.
Oh, no,
rumors. I'm not accusing you of anything. All I'm saying is that I have seen this stuff so frequently.
Yeah.
In the 11 years since 9/11, I wish I had a buck for every one of those wacky emails I got. I'd probably be able to afford a pretty nice vacation by now. So,
well, hey, Mike, on the other coin of that, and in defense of Lewis, let's talk about what we do now.
He doesn't need defending. I'm not accusing him of anything.
Oh, I'll defend Lewis any day of the week. I would love to be his advocate.
But you know what? I hope you know what Lewis, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I absolutely understand what you're saying. I actually like to check things about three times before I even discuss them with the
group.
Well,
you know, it's like the old carpenter's rule, right? Measure twice, cut once, right?
Exactly. I know that rule very well.
Okay, and that's fine. I mean, I'll be honest, I don't know you, so I always give people the same advice. It's the advice I follow, and it's the advice I give my kids. It's funny, when I started to testify on congressional hearings, I had a bunch of mentors in Washington who really helped to show me the ropes, which was greatly appreciated. I've done a whole bunch of those hearings now. And they said, Mike, always be careful. If you make a statement that they spent $4 million on a computer system, and it turns out that it was 3.8, they're going to beat you up and say you can't be trusted because you exaggerate.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So I'll tell people it's well over $1 million. Now they look it up and they say, gee whiz, it was almost $4 million. Now I'm a hero. But if I had said that it was $4 million, that it was 3.8, I'm a liar. It's remarkable how the other side does that all the time. So we really got to dot our I's and cross our T's and be careful of that sort of thing.
Well, knowing that we're being embedded, is that the proper terminology, embedded in many ways?
Well, they're embedding themselves. The bad guys are embedding themselves in America.
Well, don't you feel like we're sort of facilitating that in so many ways, though, too? I mean, as Americans?
Our government is. Well, yes, absolutely the government is. I mean, this is my point. We are fixated as a country on that 85-year-old woman who's sitting in a wheelchair because we know that as soon as she gets on that airplane, she's going to jump up from the seat and overpower the flight crew and any sky marshals who might be on board. I mean, I don't know about you, but I absolutely get petrified when I see some 85-year-old woman who's drooling. But these are the people we're serving. You know what I'm saying, Lewis.
Oh, yeah, and believe me, I have been on an airplane quite a few times flying back and forth across this country, and I would always get a kick out of how many times I get pulled over while this Arabic fellow right next to me is not getting pulled over, and I'm checked for everything. They almost pull my pants down just to check me.
Well,
I'm
I'll tell you what, I don't
I
even
look
mind
like a
going
terrorist.
Through that. I
I'm a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. What's your problem?
Well, maybe they're looking for a quick thrill. Lewis, I'm going to let you go, but I want to thank you so much for calling. But stay with us. Stay with the program.
Oh, sure will.
And I'll look
Thanks,
for that
Lewis.
Email. Thank you. We've got another caller on the line, Lauren.
What? This is a happening night this Friday night.
It is. You've got Mike Cutler. Who am I speaking with? Hello. Well, you had Mike Cutler. I guess he's gone. So be it. Okay, I'm back with you, Lauren, and that's just fine. This has been an interesting evening. Lots of callers, lots of listeners out there, which pleases me no end. You know, folks,
let me tell you something. Engaging, and this is what I really want to say, is just engaging in the dialogue is what's just the most important thing. Because if the main street and the mainstream media is not reporting on this, and this is a top story. I mean, in your experience, do you believe that this story about this gentleman who got arrested for an immigration fraud should be something that, you know, Americans should find on their television station when they turn on the news?
It should be a lead story. Let me put this into context. Congressman Peter King, who used to chair the Homeland Security Committee, talked about how we know that there are Hezbollah agents who are sleeper agents in the United States. We also know that Mike McCall, who now heads up Homeland Security in Congress, wrote a report called Line in the Sand, where he talked about what's going on in Latin America. And to tell you what's going on in Latin America, folks, you need to know this. Right now, in Latin America, we know that there are terror training camps in the tri-border region of Brazil. It involves Hezbollah, Hamas, probably Al-Qaeda. We know that there are flights arriving every week between Tehran, Iran, and Caracas, Venezuela. And these aren't tourists. These are members of the Quds, the Iranian shock troops. They work hand in glove with Hezbollah. So we know that they have a huge and growing presence in Latin America. If you have somebody in Latin America who has been living there for many years and can acquire the language and the facility of language and understanding of the country and so forth, how hard would it be for Muhammad to transform himself into Miguel? You have a story now about an alleged Hezbollah commander who was working for the U.S. military as a translator, working for L3, which is a private contractor, according to publicly released information. Translators scare the hell out of me, and I will tell you why. And I used to work with translators as an agent. Because if you have a translator, number one, he gets to know who the operatives are who work for the U.S. government. Number two, he gets to know who is being interviewed. So if you have a cooperator, he now knows who the cooperator is. As a translator, he can alter what is being reported as being said by that cooperator. He also gains access to documents. So if you want to talk about a pivotal role, if you want to talk about the linchpin, translators are in a critical position because of everything they have access to. They basically become the mouth and the ears of the agents. So that's how critical they are. So here you have somebody who, according to what is publicly available, worked as a translator in Iraq with the United States Army. This story should be headline news. The Tsarnaev brothers got political asylum by fraud. We had another guy in Idaho from Russia, same deal, political asylum. And let me tell you why I believe fraud was involved in it. I'm not making an accusation, but I'm certainly suspicious. In order for an alien to be able to qualify for political asylum, the alien has to swear out a declaration where they articulate what is legally known as credible fear. You know, we've all heard about probable cause and reasonable suspicion. Well, here's another legal term for you to file away in your lexicon, folks. Credible fear. Now, what does credible fear mean? It means that this person comes in and says, if you send me home, I will face persecution because of my race, my religion, my political orientation, the tribe I belong to, whatever the situation is in his native or her native country. Credible fear. Send me home, I'm going to be persecuted. I'm going to jail. They're going to cut off my head. They're going to castrate me. Whatever. It takes all kinds of horrific guises in countries around the world, which is why I feel so strongly about offering safe harbor and a safe haven to people who are truly in that situation. My family was decimated in the Holocaust. I mean, it wasn't just the 6 million Jews, as horrible as that was. The Nazi SOBs were responsible for the death of 13 million people. So certainly, if America can prevent that kind of tragedy from happening, we have to. We are compelled to do something. But understand that when people say, if you send me home, terrible things are going to happen to me, and then you give that person lawful status, and a short time thereafter, they hop on an airplane and intentionally go back to that country where just, you know, 6 months earlier, they said, send me home and they're going to kill me. Something's wrong with the story. And nobody bothers to check into the truthfulness of these allegations. And this has been going on for a long time. When I was an inspector at JFK Airport back in the 70s, we used to do something known as standby work. You folks may find this interesting. So if there was no flight in the room, then we had to inspect the passengers. They would give us applications to adjudicate. Well, we would have to adjudicate applications for a bunch of things, including reentry permits. A reentry permit was required for an alien to file it if they were planning to be out of the United States for more than a year or if they had intentions of visiting their home country, which was behind the Iron Curtain. So without the reentry permit, they would not be allowed back in. So I'm processing one of these applications from a person from Haiti. And we had given this person political asylum. I forget if it was Baby Doc or Papa Doc, but one of the Duvalier family members was in charge. And he said, they will kill me. The Tata Maku, which is the secret police, they're hunting for me and my family. If you send me home, it's a death sentence. Okay. We gave him political asylum. About a year later, here's an application from this very same person. Guess where he wants to go, Lauren? Back to Haiti because his grandmother is sick or whatever, and he wants to spend more than a year in Haiti.
Sure, right.
Okay.
Unbelievable.
So
hey,
I denied the application. My bosses were upset with me because of the way I denied it, I guess, also. I said that in good conscience, I cannot permit you to commit suicide.
Good
for
you.
And my boss said, you're creating problems.
Well,
I said, but the guy is obviously a liar. The same regime is in power today that has been in power for how many years? This is the same people that he said wanted to kill him, and we gave him a green card. We need to do something about it. And my boss said, yes, we do. Approve it and move on. Now, this
Mike,
has been
I
the philosophy of immigration for decades.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you were either born, I'm not sure if it was nature or nurture, but you have an uncanny ability to weed through some of the, you know, the BS that's out there and to identify the truth from
fallacy. I have a finely honed BS detector.
You do. I know. We need to market that. Let's patent that and start selling it. But let me tell you something. I've got three people who, you know, have been listening in, and it's really awesome. And I wanted just in the last 5 minutes, you know, that I'm here going to be with you, is just to talk about, you know, what we can do. Because sure. I know that the Gang of Eight, as you call them, and of course Lindsey Graham's my senator.
Well, I call
and,
him the
and he's close friends
boy.
With. Yeah, close friends with John McCain and all these people who are say they're Republicans, but I don't know what John McCain was doing over in Syria. But anyway, let's stick on the immigration issue. What can we do to try to stop this you know, monstrosity that they're trying to push out as like it's going to be some sort of dream come true act and make America just the best place in the world?
Well,
what can we do as the average
do.
American citizen?
You know, as I write in my commentaries, we need to prove to the politicians that we're not as dumb as they hope that we are. We need to be very specific about the information that we provide when we contact our politicians. Being strident and screaming doesn't work. It wouldn't hurt, though, to call up a politician and say, look, I know what you're doing, and let me tell you something.
What happened with
if
that?
You don't stop what you're doing, not only will I not vote for you, that's the least of it. My intentions
yes.
is to actually make certain that you no longer have that job.
Yes,
I will work tirelessly to see to it that you are unseated by anybody who runs against you. And by the way, Lauren, we got to be clear about something. This isn't a Democrat or Republican issue. This is an American issue.
Yes,
would
it
you
is.
Not agree? I mean, you know, if you're
I
a
agree
Democrat,
100%.
I'm a lifelong Democrat because I'm a labor guy, and I know that. And let me tell you the other thing, and I want to make a point that I was thinking about earlier today because I feel so strongly about this. Somebody sent me an email and said, why is the Tea Party not being successful? Why are they losing? I'm going to tell you why. We've got to get away from seeing our fellow Americans as our opponents. The person that disagrees with you isn't your enemy. He's an American who sees things differently. And they may take a position on issues that will light that fuse for you, but understand that not everyone has, you talked about nature nurture, not everyone has the same life experiences or the same orientation. The guy who is pro-choice.
It sounds like you have somebody on the phone call.
It does.
You have
is there
a lot
somebody
of background
with me
noise.
Here? Let me just cut this out.
Inadvertently, maybe?
Maybe. Let's try this. How's that? Lauren,
sounds
is that
better?
Yeah. Good. Now, here's the thing that I want everybody to understand. People that disagree with you, whether it's about pro-choice versus pro-life, gay rights, whatever, we need to win converts. I want all of you out there to think about something. I'm old enough to remember the Fuller Brush Man and the guy that sold the vacuum cleaners and so forth knocking on a person's door. You know, if you're a salesman in a store, it's easy. That guy is walking in there to buy something. He's got his wallet in his back pocket. He's there. He's looking to buy something. When you knock on someone's door, which is what we're doing now with our fellow Americans, they may not even want to see you. Maybe they have a stomach ache and they called in sick and they don't really want to talk to you. So your job is to come in and ingratiate yourself to the point of explaining why your position is in their best interest. And if you think that the person is wrong on certain issues, that's fine. Hold your nose and get over it. The number one threat confronting America today, folks, not because it's the issue I'm heavily involved with, it's just a matter of common sense, is the immigration issue. If we wind up permitting terrorists and criminals into America, if we permit millions of people to come into our country whose orientation is against the best interests of America, and they will vote and become politically active, we will be rotting ourselves out from the inside out. That's not to say that immigrants don't want to be great Americans. But if we don't know who people are when they evade the inspections process, that's worrisome. If you came home and found a stranger sitting in your living room watching your TV and drinking some soda, instinctively, the first thing you would ask is, what are you doing here? That's the instinctive question. And the reality is you don't know and may never know. The inspections process, and if you want to look this up, folks, go to Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182-1182 of Title 8. It lists the categories of aliens we're supposed to keep out. It's aliens with dangerous diseases, mental illness, and are violent, or sex offenders, criminals, spies, terrorists, human rights violators, war criminals, and then we get to aliens who would take the jobs of Americans. But we don't know if that guy is a spy or a terrorist or what. So understand something. We need to get enough Americans to stand with us first and foremost before we look at any other issue on one issue, and that issue is immigration. And it's not about just the Mexican border. Certainly it needs to be secured. But it's about no to comprehensive reform. They would wind up processing likely tens of millions of applications. There is zero resources to go out on the street and make certain that the applications are honest and truthful. They will not even be able to do face-to-face interviews. So the names that we will be putting on their documents may not have any relationship to that person at all, because he knows that his real name is on every no-fly and terror watch list in the world. We are undermining national security. We are undermining the middle class. We are undermining all of our systems. So let's focus on the biggest threat. You know, when you're in the alleyway, they say go after the biggest guy first so you don't have to fight all the other guys. The big guy in the alley is immigration. Because without securing the borders and enforcing the laws and making certain that there's integrity to the system, we are undermining the U.S. military. We are leaving ourselves open to terrorist attacks. I hope I make sense to you.
You make absolute sense to me, and you know, and you as a New Yorker, and with your background, and me as now a Southerner down here for the last 20 years, and my background, if we can stand united and stand in a front for this particular issue, so many other Americans can join us. And one last question, just for my own curiosity.
Now we can run a little bit late. I see it's 8:02, but I'm willing to stay a little bit late. And if you have to leave, that's fine. I'll stay on for a little bit this evening, folks.
You know who I'm headed to go see her. Our other friends, Mary Lynn Finn and Susan Lane and a few other of the girls are going out for a little shindig. So
that sounds like
I
a
will come and say hello.
Give them a big hello from me.
I will. So what do you think is going to happen? What's the next step for this particular person who's in custody right now? What does that look like? What's the next few days? And
well, they're holding him without bail. He's a risk of flight. Mm-hmm. He's certainly a threat to community safety, and those are the two issues. And, you know, as an immigration agent, I very often used to actually argue bail in these cases. And so the two components to a bail hearing, and you're an attorney, you know, this is there's only two issues: danger to the community, risk of flight. Given the nature of his crimes and the nature of his background, he's an extreme risk of flight, and I think he's an extreme risk to the safety of the community. So they're holding him. And I think, you know, one of two things will happen. He'll either plead guilty or will go to trial. He's looking at a significant jail time. He's looking at being divested of his U.S. citizenship and being sent packing. And that's exactly what needs to happen. But understand what we don't do. There was a guy by the name of Fezahazian, and I mentioned this case when I was on with Megyn Kelly on Fox News back on May 2nd. Fezahazian, big spread on the ICE website and the Department of Justice website, alien smuggler from Eritrea pleads guilty to smuggling aliens. And when you read through the report, what do you find? Well, at the time that he claimed that he was running for his life in Eritrea, he wasn't in Eritrea. He was in Guatemala smuggling Africans into the United States through Latin America. So it's wonderful that they got him to plead guilty to alien smuggling. And by the way, there was nothing in the news release about what efforts were being made to locate the aliens that he smuggled, to arrest them and find out why they were willing to take an amazingly circuitous route to get to Latin America, to get to the United States. It was a very costly process. And when you have people from third world countries willing to spend tons of money to come here illegally, you have to worry who's funding them and what their ultimate objective is. But there wasn't a word about any efforts being made to locate those people. And there was nothing in the press release about this guy being charged with lying on his application for political asylum. So what this really means, folks, is that even if the guy gets 3 or 5 or 6 years in jail, they should get a lot more than that, but he won't. When he gets out, he will not be deported because he still enjoys the protection of somebody who's been granted political asylum. They should go after him and charge him with fraud so they can deport him. In the case of Wissam Alush, he will be facing deportation once they divest him of his citizenship. So I think that that's a good situation. Of course, God knows what battlefield he may well show up on at some point. But these are worrying cases because there's more like him. And the saddest thing is it makes people look askance at immigrants because everyone now worries that because the system has such little integrity or no integrity, perhaps, that everyone worries about people who come here from other countries. Well, you know, our own government is betraying the American people. The politicians are betraying their constituents and the oaths of office that they took. When they talk about defending the country and defending the Constitution, it starts with keeping our enemies out of the country. Now, again, that's not to vilify immigrants, and it's not to say that the guys who come here out of desperation are necessarily criminals. But the problem is what we don't know can and has hurt us. How many times can we keep doing the same stupidity and ignoring it? We figured out that you could put bombs in shoes, so we take our shoes off. They figured out that you could put bombs in your underwear, so now they're X-raying people's private parts, okay? But where somebody is able to get citizenship by lying, we're willing to give people citizenship, lawful status, because it's being driven by the Chamber of Commerce. I call them the Chamber of Horrors. The bankers, the immigration lawyers, all these people, the special interest groups, they're making tons of money and they're pouring money into the campaign coffers of the politicians who are seeking elected office. You know, as an agent, I couldn't take anything other than a glass of water. You have politicians who are taking with both hands. If that isn't legalized bribery, I don't know what is.
Oh, yeah. You and I have had this. I know. You and I are on the same page about that. It's corruption. Let me ask you one last question. If I were going to call Lindsey Graham, and actually he sat right behind me at the South Carolina State Conference about a couple months ago, but if I were going to have an opportunity to see Lindsey Graham face-to-face, what would be the two sentences that would be the most important that you would think for me to say to him concerning this this committee that he's on and he's passed this bill up?
Besides giving him my phone number, because I'd love to talk to him, tell him that the 9/11 Commission findings are being ignored by comprehensive immigration reform.
Oh, that's huge. That's beautiful what you just said right there. Every American citizen can grasp hold of that.
They convened that commission just like they did after the Space Shuttle Challenger blew up, just like after the Space Shuttle Columbia disintegrated. There was a body convened to find out what went wrong. When an airplane crashes, the NTSB comes out and does an investigation to find out if it was a mechanical problem, if it was pilot error. How do we prevent the same sort of tragedy from happening again? That was why they convened the 9/11 Commission. So the 9/11 Commission, as I read at the beginning, had specific concerns that they were clear about, that it was immigration benefit fraud. They said it clearly, immigration fraud. And what you need to say to Mr. Graham is, Mr. Graham, why is it that immigration fraud is being utterly ignored and given the number of aliens and the lack of resources, this bill, if enacted, should provide you or should cause Al-Qaeda to give you and the other seven gangsters the MVP award?
Well, Mike, I'll tell you what, I'm going to go talk this over with my friends as soon as I leave this this wonderful radio show, and I think a group of us will be saying just those things to Senator Lindsey Graham and the other senators. And, you know, I just have, you know, one other little thing that when I was reading through some of your commentaries, I love the way you make analogies. It's a wonderful way of describing things visually for somebody like me, almost in a parable, really. When you talk about the skydiving instructor who was so eager to, you know, take pictures of his students that
yep.
he jumped out of the airplane, right? You remember
yep.
that one?
Absolutely.
Well,
everything was going real great until he reached for the ripcord, and to his horror, he realized he hadn't put the parachute on before he jumped.
Right. And so you relate.
That couldn't stop that gets you.
And the moral to the story is really, you know, sometimes
look
you can be chasing so many different things. Yeah, and you forget the most important thing that's really going to save your life or keep you safe, right?
Yep.
Does there ever become a point where we're, you know, where we're, it's almost irretrievable? I mean, where the consequences could potentially
well, you know,
be irrevocable.
Flight, I did a little single-engine flying. When I was a kid, I wasn't really impressed with the athletes. The people I was really amazed by, besides my dad, who was always going to be my biggest hero, were the astronauts and test pilots. I even got letters from Alan Shepard and Gus Grissom. I met a bunch of the astronauts. And, you know, if you're into aviation, you know that when you're flying, you reach a point that's known as the point of no return, when you don't have enough fuel to go back to the airport from which you left. And there was a point of no return with the shuttle also. Once they got far enough away from the Cape, it was called the no return. And what that meant was they had to forge on because, you know, that was it. There was no option of going back. If we enact comprehensive reform, the day that the president's signature, God forbid should that day happen, hits that piece of paper, that will be the point of no return. Because at that point, there will be no way of turning it off. There will be no way of saying to the people who filed their applications, oops, we didn't realize that this isn't a good idea.
Wow. Well, God bless you, Mike. You're dear to my heart. I'm glad you used my alias today when you were, you know, announcing me on the radio to protect the innocent. You use my
sure.
alias. Just every time I talk with you, I learn something. I'm going to probably follow up so that I can get, you know, my exact language that I'm going to pass on to Mr. Graham.
Give him my
God
cell phone
you.
Number. Give him my cell phone and my email address.
You got it. You know. You asked me to do something like that, and I have no fear in trying to get that accomplished. So
you're a sweetheart. I really appreciate it.
It's an honor to be on your show tonight, and God bless you, and God bless America. I'll catch up with you later.
Hey, I hope your mom is well, and thank you again for joining me, Lauren.
Thanks so much.
Have a great weekend. Thank you. Bye. Look, folks, I'm just going to stay with you for just a couple of minutes more, but I want you to think about something because I was reading an email today, and the email was about how do we get the Tea Party or any political group to be successful. And I started to think about the language, the confrontational language that all too often I hear about liberals. And I got an email from somebody today, and he referred to liberals as bleeding hearts. And I thought about it, and I'm saying to myself, is that supposed to be an insult? And what does it say about somebody who refers to a fellow American as being a bleeding heart? Is it bad to be compassionate? Is that a weakness to be compassionate? Because I'm sure that you probably have the same upbringing that I did, and I was raised and taught to believe that we were at our best when we were compassionate. So, you know, it's not what you say, as my mom would say, but how you say it. The problem that we're facing where immigration is concerned, folks, isn't about being compassionate. It's about being compassionate, if you will, for the wrong people. Why is it that everybody starts shedding tears for the illegal alien who's in a desperate situation? And believe me, I arrested people as an immigration agent where I went home feeling pretty lousy that I found certain people because you realize that they were in a no-win situation. It was awful. But why doesn't anybody care about those American families who have lost their homes to foreclosure, who are scared to death that they may well lose custody of their children because they've become homeless? There was a story on 60 Minutes about Americans basically were hiding in the shadows. They featured a man who had been a carpenter, and I don't doubt that he lost his career to day laborers. His wife had died, and he had his two teenage kids living with him in the back of a truck. And every day before school, according to what they showed at 60 Minutes, he would drive the truck to a different gas station so his children could wash up in the bathroom of a truck stop and then go to school. Why is it wrong to be a bleeding heart, so to speak, and really get upset about that poor guy whose wife died, who's trying to do right by his children, and who lost his home to foreclosure. And from everything that he said, and that I believe is probably accurate, through no fault of his own. Charity, folks, begins at home. There's nothing wrong with being a bleeding heart. I want to know, who do we look out for first? You know, when there's a terrible fire, and you see that image of the parent running with their child in their arms to safety, nobody would ever say to that man or woman, what's wrong with you? You saved your child before you saved someone else's child? Common sense says we save our own first. America needs to look to save Americans first. If America is weakened, and it is, then the rest of the world is in trouble. When we fly on airplanes, they tell us that if there's a decompression in the cabin and the oxygen mask comes down, that we should put our own mask on before we help somebody else. Because if we don't, and we are rendered unconscious, rather than being part of the solution, we become part of the problem. America needs that oxygen mask now. American workers certainly need that oxygen mask now. America needs to first and foremost assure the future of American citizens, of every race, of every religion, of every ethnicity. This isn't a statement of racism. By falling into this nonsense language and talking about how this is about the Latino vote or some other vote, immigration isn't about a race or a religion, folks. It's simply about making one distinction, the distinction between people who are citizens and people who are not citizens. And the term for somebody who's not a citizen is alien. It's very simple. The other side doesn't want to use that term because it provides clarity to the discussion. It's not that the aliens are in the shadows. It's that the politicians like Chuck Schumer and Lindsey Graham and Marco Rubio are hiding the truth in the shadows. And it's time that we, the people, put the bright light of truth on those shadows and got all of our fellow Americans to understand what's really being done in the name of compassion or whatever it is that they're selling. We're not buying it. You know, I always like to say at the end of my programs that democracy is not a spectator sport. That's never been more important than now. Congress is going to start debating, or the Senate is going to be starting to debate comprehensive immigration reform. I want you to remember how I described it when I wrote a commentary for the Washington Times. Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama liked what I wrote so much he quoted me. I was proud with attribution. It put a lump in my throat because I got to hear one of those hearings on my telephone. One of the 9/11 family members called me up and said, you need to hear this. I was in my car, and he held the telephone next to his TV, and he was watching C-SPAN. And Senator Sessions used my words, and again, I'm so appreciative that he did it by quoting me, where I called comprehensive immigration reform the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. First and foremost, just as Americans are expected to say a Pledge of Allegiance to the American flag, it's time that our elected representatives set a Pledge of Allegiance to the constituents that they swore to represent and represent effectively. That's the work Americans must do. We folks must make our elected representatives accountable. We need to remind them that we're not as dumb as they think or hope that we are. I thank you so much for joining me this Friday. It's always a joy to get together with you. Again, I ask that you check out my websites, michaelcutler.net, talkborder.com, and please visit that website over in California, in Santa Barbara, capsweb.org. They're doing good work, and I think you'll enjoy reading what they have posted on their website. Look forward to seeing you guys next week at the same time. Meanwhile, everybody, have a wonderful weekend. Take care. Good night.